The Marine Corps has a reputation for running towards danger. Traditionally, they navigate toward it and pound through surf for amphibious assaults. Although recent conflicts haven't required the Marines' storied amphibious capabilities, it remains an important asset. Now the question is whether the Navy is buying enough amphibious ships to fully support the Marine Corps. Joining me with more, Dan Garay, Vice President of the Lexington Institute. And Dan, I guess maybe the first question is, the Navy owns the ships that carry the Marines to the Marine missions.
That's right. This is the sea services collaborating. When we send out a group of ships and the Marines to go on them, we call it a MUR, Marine Expeditionary Unit Amphibious Ready Group. And it is a tight collaboration between Navy and Marine Corps.
And you have looked at the acquisition plans of the Navy in terms of amphibious ships. And what does it look? Well, first, we'll get to the other vehicles first, but let's start with amphibious ships. What is the status of the inventory and what are the plans looking like?
Well, the status of the inventory is we are now in the process of replacing the older ships of limited capability with more capable ships, particularly amphibious assault ships. And the reason that's particularly important is you get extra capability, not just interior space volume for equipment, but deck space. So, for example, the amphibious assault ships, the LHDs, can actually carry fighters, the F-35B, for example, and the V-22 Osprey. So they become like mini aircraft carriers, which is a huge jump in capability. So we got the right ships coming in. The question really is the number, and the numbers simply aren't adequate.
Well, what are they basing the numbers on in terms of their mission requirements, or is it simply budget-driven?
Well, it's budget-driven, honestly, because what the Marine Corps will tell you, and in effect, it's the Marine Corps that establishes the overall demand. In order to have enough amphibious ships to deploy what they call, you know, essentially close to division, two expeditionary brigades, this is sort of the force that would be credible if you actually had to go and assault a serious beach. It's less than the force we had during the 1991 Gulf War offshore to deal with Saddam Hussein. You need over 40. We now are looking at about the mid-30s in terms of the numbers of ships. Now, not only does that mean I can't deploy the size of force I want, but we're using these ships now much more frequently in these smaller deployments, what I call the MUR. And there's such a high demand that they're taking these three ship units and splitting them up. So one will be in the Arabian Sea, one will be in the Red Sea, one will be off of Somalia. And the trouble with that is the ships are designed to be a unit together, the three. And so when you're doing that, everybody is sort of taking additional risk. Everybody is getting penalized. The real number should be a minimum of 38, four more than they're currently planning for, and probably close to the 40, 42 that has been proposed.
Because if you have a given number, a certain number of those is always in repair or maintenance or being deployed for training. So the real forward force is much smaller than the total number of ships.
That's right. For example, I mean, the real point about this is we used to have a MUR in the Mediterranean. That was the basis for responding to crises, embassy assaults and rescues and all that kind of stuff. The Marine Corps has now had to create a special land-based unit. Actually, there are two of them now, that are located in southern Europe or in the Mediterranean area because they don't have enough ships to have a full-fledged MUR in the Med. They're either dealing with in the Pacific or they're off of Saudi Arabia or in the Persian Gulf. So clearly, if you're putting the Marines that should be on ships ashore, you don't have enough ships.
We're speaking with Dan Garay, Vice President of the Lexington Institute, and you've also written about the shortage of vehicles that take the Marines from the amphibious ships to the landing itself. What's the status there?
Well, we are just in the process. It's been a very painful and laborious process of creating a new, if you will, advanced amphibious combat vehicle. There's actually a two-phase program. The first is going to be a more traditional vehicle that will be kind of an interim step. And then the Marine Corps is looking for an advanced vehicle that can move rapidly from the ships to the shore, assault the beach, support Marine ground forces as they go forward. It's a real challenge. We sort of got there with what they call the expeditionary fighting vehicle, but it turned out that the decision was made that it was too expensive and it was canceled. We're now kind of revisiting all that. We've actually done it. And there are now contracts to actually produce these vehicles. But until those are in place, we're having to deal with either old vehicles or upgraded, really, versions of very old vehicles, 30 years and more, which is not the way you want to operate. We now have smaller forces, very high tech in a lot of cases, but you know, you have to use everything in your kit as a unit. And the ships and the forces now do everything. They now do hostage rescue. They now do special ops related counterterrorism stuff. They now do amphibious assault. We're sending Marines to Norway for the first time in about 30 years, right? So they're there. They're operating as part of the support force for the operation against Mosul. So we've really gone away from huge, massive World War II style operations. But at the same time, we've asked the Marines and the Navy supporting them to do 20 times the number of things all over the world.
The massing is not there, but the diversity of missions is increased exponentially.
Hugely. Demand has increased, and the force has declined in size, number of ships and all the rest, the complexity of what you're being asked to do, the technology involved with F-35B, B-22. They're now talking about putting missiles and other capabilities on some of these ships to add to the assault power. It's a radically different approach. The Marines really are what they call the 911 force. These capabilities really are a huge part of our first day of a crisis response.
And how good are the Navy and the Marine Corps at coordinating the way they approach Congress for these things?
they're very good. I mean, anybody who sort of works in Washington knows that the Marine Corps decides to go up on the Hill and make a case. They do an extremely good job. The problem is there simply isn't enough money for everything we need to do. The Navy's got a lot of demand. Actually, the Marine Corps too, but the Navy's got huge demand. Carriers, attack submarines, the Ohio replacement program, all of this, LCS. And so, it's gritting its teeth itself when it defines the level of amphibious warfare ships it has, because it too knows it's not enough.
So what is in the National Defense Authorization Act, much less the budget, which we have no idea what it's actually going to be at this point, does the NDAA recognize the need, at least to the minimum 40 or so that you've mentioned, of the amphibious ships?
They want to get to about 38 if they can. The question is there going to be any additional money, and will it go for that given all the competing needs? Any additional ship has a huge impact because it ripples through the entire system. As you said, I have then more capabilities. It doesn't have to be sitting in overhaul. It doesn't have to be in training. An additional ship or set of ships can go out in harm's way. So, you need them in set. So if I buy one additional ship, it's marginal of value. If I buy three, now I have the potential for an actual unit.
Dan Gurray is Vice President of the Lexington Institute. Thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure.